Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, a very warm welcome to Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who joins us on the phone. Welcome, Eamon.
Deirdre, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Well, listen, I'm always delighted when the listeners get in touch and suggest a topic that they would like to chat about. And somebody is looking for you to talk about sleep apnea. So first of all, tell us what it is and how it can be sorted.
Okay, fair enough. So sleep apnea, the clue is in the second word, the apnea. So apnea is a medical term meaning that somebody stops breathing. So there are shades and grades of this. So you can have hypapnea, which is basically less breathing, shallower breathing, and then apnea, where you actually stop breathing completely. So the classic scenario is, because the person themselves are not aware of this, and I'll explain why in a minute, usually it's a loved one is watching a person beside them at night, and during the course of the night, either occasionally or in a number of occasions, many, many times during the night, the person will actually stop breathing. You're looking at the person and you're saying, when are they going to take the breath? And it goes past 10, 15, 20, 30, 35, 40 seconds, and the person is not breathing. Now, if you look really, really closely, you can sometimes see that the person's chest is moving, but they're not actually getting any air in. And the reason for that is because the problem with sleep apnea is that the airways, the passageways inside in the chest collapse, and they form a kind of a seal, so the person can't take the breath in. Now, while this is going on, the oxygen levels in the person's body is going down and the carbon dioxide levels are going up. And eventually what will happen is it sort of wakes the person up so as that they give an unmerciful snort, a big, huge breath in, and then off they go again. And after a period of time, they stop breathing. Now, the problem with sleep apnea is that those periods of time when the person is not breathing, when the oxygen levels are falling, carbon dioxide levels are rising, the person is roused from their sleep, but usually not to the point where they're aware that they've been woken up, so as that sometimes dozens, sometimes hundreds of times at night, a person is being woken from their sleep. So naturally, their sleep is very disturbed. And one of the main characteristics of this condition is the drowsiness and tiredness that follows the following day.
Oh dear. And how common is sleep apnea, Eamon?
About 4% of men and 2% of women are the figures that I've seen quoted. It's not uncommon. And certainly as a GP down through the years, I've certainly seen many people with sleep apnea.
Okay. And is it potentially dangerous?
Yes. The problem is that, if you like, because the person is effectively being strangled almost by their own windpipes, their systems get very activated, the kind of alarm systems get activated. And the difficulty with this is that it puts stress on the body, and it is known that there are higher rates of heart attacks and strokes in people who suffer from sleep apnea. Another practical issue is that because of the associated day-to-day time drowsiness, people who suffer from sleep apnea are something like 6 to 12 or 18 times more likely to suffer from car crashes because they fall asleep behind the wheel while they're driving. And that's another, obviously, serious complication.
Oh, dear, that sounds dangerous. And, Eamon, so is there a connection between being overweight and suffering from sleep apnea?
Okay, so there's no doubt that there are a number of risk factors. I've already said it's about 4% of men and 2% of women. So being male is a risk factor. Being overweight is a risk factor. If you take alcohol at night, if you take sleeping tablets at night, if you smoke, these are the kind of things that increase the risk of your developing sleep apnea. There was something else and it just popped out of my head for a minute. Oh, I know, that your neck collar, what size collar do you take? If it's more than 17 inches in a man or more than 15 inches in the woman, you have a large neck, and that kind of crowds things inside the neck, and this can lead to increased risk of sleep apnea as well.
Oh dear. So talk to me about cures. I mean, obviously losing weight would be a good start for some cases.
For some people, yeah. So the situation is that, unfortunately, with sleep apnea, and while we understand the mechanism which it works, it's more probably a condition that we treat rather than actually cure. Now, there are occasionally situations where it can be associated with an underdeveloped jaw, and some surgical procedures to bring the jaw forward might help if somebody has very, very large tonsils, that might make them more prone to sleep apnea. But in the vast majority of cases, you're using a thing called CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure. And essentially what it is, it's a device that's, it's a mask that sits onto the person's nose or nose and mouth. And what it does, it provides, constant slight back pressure, so that in effect it kind of splints the airways open. In other words, that because the person is exhaling against a slight pressure, that back pressure keeps the airways open and allows the person to breathe. And to be fair, on the one hand, it's an imposition on the individual, and people can take a while to get used to it. But on the other hand, there are those people who have had it, and they say once they've had it, they've never had better quality sleep in a long time. I've mentioned already the issue about driving. It is a condition that stops people from driving if you have a class 1 or 2 class, or class 2 license, especially if you have a class 2 license. And sometimes the only way the person can get back on the road is if they start using a CPAP machine.
Okay, good Lord. I didn't realise it was quite as serious as you've been saying. Yeah. Can children get it, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, it isn't known to happen in children. Typically, if unfortunately the child is overweight or if they've got large tonsils. So again, the same thing, weight loss or getting rid of the tonsils can be helping children. It tends to be male, middle-aged, overweight people are the ones who get it most.
Okay. Well, look, we've got some questions for you about sleep apnea already, and we again a reminder to listeners, 083 300 3300, if you'd like to ask Eamon a question. We'll prioritise the sleep apnea questions, but if we have time, we'll come on to other general medical queries as well. Eamon, this one is from a 68-year-old female listener. I beg your pardon, sorry, that's not to do with sleep apnea. We'll come back to that one. This one is from a 58-year-old female who was diagnosed with sleep apnea. She said, I had 14 events in the night when diagnosed. Yeah. Now it's down to 4 to 7 events a night.
Yeah.
Do I still need to stay on the sleep apnea machine now that I have less events?
Unfortunately, the reason you're having less events is because of the machine. And unfortunately, if you stop using the machine, it's likely that you'll go back up to the 14 to 15 events. So like 4 to 5 events, and events are either where the person stops breathing completely, or that their breathing becomes less. It's called the apnea hypopnea index, AHI. Less than 5 is considered acceptable. Mild to moderate is kind of from 5 to 15, moderate to severe is 15 to 30, and over 30 events an hour is considered a severe sleep apnea. If you're having 4 or 5, unfortunately it's because you're using the machine, the likelihood is that you're going to go back to having the 14 events or 15 events per hour.
Yeah, probably not the answer she wanted, Eamon, but you have to be honest with her. Yeah. Now this next one is a bit tricky. This listener says they have a 39-year-old brother with Down syndrome who was diagnosed with sleep apnea late last year. The problem is he keeps taking off the mask at night, either intentionally or in his sleep. Any advice on how to keep it on without tying it to his face?
Absolutely.
And the whole house is upset with
the problem, So a couple of things I'd say there. Firstly, unfortunately, there is an association also between Down syndrome and sleep apnea. There is a known association there as well. And as much as in anybody else, unfortunately, if somebody who has Down syndrome has sleep apnea, it does unfortunately increase their risk of heart disease. Probably the best thing to do is speak to the people who have supplied you with the device. It'll typically be supplied by a hospital, or may come from a private supplier, but on the recommendation of a hospital consultant. And they'll be the people who will give you practical advice. You won't be the only person. You won't be the only person who's living with a family member at Downs who has this particular issue, and they may be able to find somewhere around this for you. I can't give you the answer myself, but I know that they'll be the people that'll be able to answer that for you.
Okay, hopefully they will. Eamon, we'll take a break. It's 60 minutes past 2 for anyone wondering about the time. We're talking about sleep apnea on our Medical Matters slot with Dr. Eamon Shanahan. If you have a question for him, you can phone it through on 066 712 3666. Brenda's taking the calls. We have more questions on sleep apnea, and we will get to some general medical queries as well. But for now, though, we'll take this break. 083 300 300 300 if you have a medical query for Dr. Eamon. One more so far, Eamon, on sleep apnea. This is a 33-year-old male who has sleep apnea. He says the problem is most days he can taste blood in his mouth, and yesterday he found blood in his right nostril. He's wondering, is this anything to do with having sleep apnea?
No, there's an interesting point there. It might or might not have something to do with the sleep apnea. There can be other problems of the upper airways, so things like the sinuses and so on, which can be there in association with the sleep apnea. But it can also occur as a result of the treatment for sleep apnea. One of the issues with the CPAP machines is that it may cause drying of the airways, though my understanding is that the newer machines would have humidifiers built into them. Blood is always a sign not to be ignored. I suggest that he make contact with his own GP and have a chat with them about this.
Texter says, I didn't know I had central sleep apnea until I went for a sleep study test in New York. And now I use the CPAP machine all the time.
That's exactly it. So this is the problem, that people who suffer from sleep apnea are not aware of it themselves. They might be aware of the symptoms of it. They might find themselves excessively drowsy. I remember years ago, there was one of my patients, and basically what they had to do was they were quite open and transparent. They said they couldn't take a journey that involved them passing through traffic lights, because if they had to stop at the traffic lights, they'd fall asleep. And that's how severe their drowsiness was. Most people aren't aware that they have sleep apnea, but there again, the CPAP machine, the CPAP machine, continuous positive airways pressure machine, though it is a bit of a bother, can be dramatically effective, and it makes a huge difference in quality of life. And again, I stress that for people who are driving, especially for professional drivers, they can't go back on the road unless they've actually been properly treated with CPAP for their sleep apnea.
Texter again wants to know, is sleep apnea classed as a disability, and would you qualify for a disability payment if you haven't?
Put a camera on yourself, a video on yourself for some part of the night, and see what happens and see. So the classic pattern, as I said, is that the person is snoring and snoring, and then they actually stop breathing, and it's very dramatic. It's very obvious when it happens. And then short time afterwards or a while afterwards, they take a deep breath. So maybe you, by putting a video on yourself, you could see whether or not this is happening. Anyway, the other way, as I said before, is use the Epworth or the Stop Bang questionnaires. Fill those out for yourself. And if your results are positive on those questionnaires, then your GP can organise you to be seen by a relevant specialist, or the relevant specialist, the respiratory physician.
Another listener asks, does sleeping on your back make sleep apnea more likely?
Good point. Absolutely, yes. It is known that people who sleep on their back can be more prone to sleep apnea. Basically, what happens is that the various airways relax. And if somebody's lying on their back, the airways collapse back, then they close off the airways. Now, one of the practical ways for some individuals is there are devices you can get from the surgical suppliers, or indeed there's a small thing you can do yourself, just to encourage you to sleep on your side rather than on your back, because naturally if you're fast asleep, you're not going to know what position you're in. There are devices that you can get that essentially, if you like, put a bit of a ridge in the middle of your back, so that when you try to sleep on your back, you fall to one side or the other, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like the old one about the tennis ball on your back, the back of your pyjamas,
exactly,
to stop you snoring.
That's the idea, that's exactly it.
Now, this next one, Eamon, is not about sleep apnea per se, but it is about sleeping. It's from a caller who dreams a lot, and sometimes the dreams are very upsetting. Could Eamon say something about this, and is it natural?
It's probably not unnatural. That's a very interesting one, because there are many levels and layers to this particular thing. Our brains don't switch off during the night. It's not 100% certain what actually happens to our brains. One of the things that is thought that happens during the night time is that, if you like, the brain kind of resets itself, clears junk out of itself in a chemical sense, and resets itself for the following day. For some people, they can have very pronounced, very vivid dreams, and this can be, for some people, very troublesome. Now, it may be a reflection of an underlying psychological state and anxiety or depression. It may be a reflection of old traumas, or it may be that there's something else going on in their life that's causing them bother. The treatment for this is tricky enough in the sense that you need to suss out if there are underlying issues that need to be addressed. There isn't really a medication to treat this, because medication as such, you can make a person unconscious, but you're not really giving them a natural sleep, if you know what I mean. So it's going to be a question of trying to interpret what this is, and it may very well be that might need to seek the help of a counsellor for this.
All right. We're still talking about sleep-related issues. This is from Anne, and she says she's 45, and when I'm about to wake up, I find I'm lifeless and I get terrified.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, is this hypnagogic paralysis? It's the state where it's a phenomenon that is recognised. I'm not sure if there is a treatment as such for it. It's essentially that the person's mind is waking up, but the body hasn't woken up yet, if you like, to put it this way. And you have this, it feels if you can't move, you're conscious, or you're aware of your surroundings, but you can't actually move. An unpleasant, unfortunate situation. I'm not aware, I've no doubt people will correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I'm not aware of there being any specific treatment for this. I think it's a hypnagogic paralysis, I think is the name for it.
Okay. Caller age 73, a male caller. He says he was diagnosed with sleep apnea last year. He's on a breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
He takes blood pressure tablets as well. Now, he has two questions. He wants to know, first of all, is there a quieter apparatus that won't disturb his sleep? And he secondly wants to know, what's the life expectancy of someone with sleep apnea?
Yeah, my understanding is that people with treated sleep apnea have the same life expectancy as somebody who doesn't have sleep apnea. That's my understanding. In answer to the first question, best thing to do is go back to the supplier of the devices. There are different devices now. I certainly don't know what these devices are, but it'd be worthwhile talking to the supplier to find something that would be less noisy and less troublesome and less intrusive. I think the bigger problem tends to be just the device that you have to wear on your face, because it's there, something that's on your face, and that can be difficult. But my understanding is the machinery itself can be made reasonably quiet.
Okay, a caller gets cramps in his legs in bed at night, but they go again when he gets up and walks around. What could this be?
Yeah, nighttime cramps are a bothersome and troublesome thing. Magnesium supplements can be of benefit. I've been reading recently vitamin K2 supplements, that vitamin K2 supplements can be of benefit, even though I think the science behind that is not as strong. And that seems to be where it's at the moment in terms of treating nighttime cramps.
Okay, are you still there?
I am indeed.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I wasn't sure whether you'd finished or not.
I finished, yes. A quick answer,
Eamon. Thank you. Now, we're on to the more general queries. A female in her late 50s has osteoporosis. She said a score of -3. Also, I have no gel in my lower back discs. Any advice?
What the score of -3 means is that it's your 3 standard deviations less than the average healthy young person's back. Now, it's just simply a measure. And once you get to less than -2.5, then radiologically, it's determined that you have osteoporosis. Essentially, at that stage, as well as the calcium, vitamin D and weight-bearing exercise, your arm will certainly be offered a treatment to try to strengthen or reduce the amount of bone loss that you have. Unfortunately, all our discs dry out. The older we get, it's just part and parcel of aging. Some people happen sooner than others. It just means that our backs are not as supple as they would have been when we were young.
Okay. Lister says, can you ask Dr. Eamon to spell the screening quiz that he mentioned for sleep apnea?
Okay. So there are two, Epworth, E-P-W-O-R-T-H. So I'll repeat that again, E-P-W-O-R-T-H. And the other one is called Stop Bang, S-T-O-P-B-A-N-G. So look up both of those. They're two different questionnaires. And they are screening tools for sleep apnea. Epworth scale and Stop Bang.
Very good. Caller's been on. She says her husband is 49 and he's had sleep apnea for many years and the machine he uses is very quiet. So you can get a quiet machine.
That's exactly it. I never know those. And it goes back to the point I made earlier on. While untreated sleep apnea is known to be associated with bad things, treated sleep apnea, you're in the same risk factor as somebody who's never had sleep apnea.
Oh, okay. Another listener says, if you think you have sleep apnea, you can go to the doctor. They'll give you this little monitor to put on your nose and onto your finger. And then you bring it back the next day and they're able to tell you the results from that. And that will tell you whether you've had an episode or not.
Yeah, there are screening tools. The current gold standard, but it's difficult to access, is an admission overnight to hospital, where it's not just those two devices, but quite a number of other devices are attached to you. And that gives the definitive answer. The use of the simple monitors can be, again, a screening tool. I know respiratory physicians would be reluctant to label somebody because of the consequences, because of the fact that you're committing somebody to using a machine for the rest of their lives just on the basis of those relatively simple tests on their own.
Exactly, yeah. Listener says, does mouth tape help with sleep apnea?
Yeah, I suppose the idea there is that if there is some sense that if you reposition the jaws, that might help with the breathing. It can be useful for some people if you've got relatively mild sleep apnea. It can be useful. You might not have to resort to the machine. But again, this is something you need to talk to the relevant specialist about.
Yeah, exactly. Just finally, Eamon, and I know we're gone over time, but a listener says, there are different types of machines. Some are less noisy than others, and there's also different types of masks. I tried three different masks before I got one that suited me. So
that's exactly it. And in other words, you talk to the suppliers to find the machine and the mask that suits you. That's really where it's at in terms of the management.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, Eamon, I had no idea the extent of sleep apnea out there.
There you go.
Among the community and within the community, and so many questions came in, so it was well worth doing that.
It was indeed.
As a topic. And thank you as always for your time and expertise. And we'll chat to you again next week.
Take care. Bye, Dan. Bye.
And that is Dr. Eamon Shanahan. And just to reiterate that point, it was actually one of our listeners who got in touch a couple of weeks ago and said, Deirdre, will you at some stage ask Eamon to talk about sleep apnea? So we're always happy to put on the agenda whatever medical issue you think we should be talking about. There's loads of them that are kind of general things like headaches and stomach problems and bladder problems and things like that are very broad topics. And we're happy to revisit those every so often. We usually take general queries, or rather I should say Eamon usually takes general queries. But if there is a specific condition or illness or whatever that you would like Eamon to focus in on some week, he will do his very best to do so. And we also have some experts from the Bonsecours Hospital in Tralee, our sponsors, who come on the show with Eamon from time to time. And they're also equally happy to answer any question you might have. So do get in touch with us anytime at all. The email address is talkabout@radiokerry.ie, and talkabout is all one word, talkabout@radiokerry.ie, if you've any suggestions for a topic for medical matters. Now,